This is not what we want, man.
Bahama Soul Club featuring Kojato with Afro Shigida. Don't ask me what a Shigida is, but that's what it is. It's from their 2010 album Bossa Nova Just Smells Funky. Yeah, that's the title. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and you know it's Friday. It is time to free your mind of all kinds of thoughts about things that have gone on in this past week and other issues that you wish to bring to our attention. And what a week we had this week and still are having. But welcome to the best open forum on the planet. This is the gathering place for the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. This is where you drive the vehicle. You share your thoughts about this week's programs, about major issues and events, or any subject you consider worthy of further consideration and debate. Call 888-874-4888 and add your voice to the mix. What have you to say about the events of this past week, the stories we did on this program this past week, or anything else you wish us to take into consideration and to begin to discuss, or that would enlighten us and take us to a whole new level of understanding. This is the work that we do in order to create community, and by that I mean we provide a space. I devote 20% of this program to the listeners, because I believe it is important for us to discuss things with each other, to talk to each other. And in talking with each other, we engage in one of the rarest assets that we have these days, which is peer education, peer-to-peer education. We each have something to contribute. We each have experience and expertise and just plain ideas in all these different spheres. And if we bring them to the table with the right spirit, what we are engaging in, therefore, is in the formation of community. And people don't have to agree. It's not really important whether people agree or disagree. It is important, though, that you offer the best of yourself. You offer the best thoughts that you can muster up, and with the right spirit. And that is simply to inform, or to put ideas out there that people can, you know, build upon. And that's how we create community. And that's, I've always believed that that's a very important function of radio. And the ability, like no other medium, to immediately communicate with each other. That is why we do this. So Free Your Mind Friday is very much part of this process, and I look forward to it all the time because I, too, get an education from what people are saying out there. And many times, you know, your eyes are opened to the ways of seeing things. And if it achieves just that, it is serving the purpose. So 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's get some conversation going. Let's start in Berkeley. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrecht.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. What's for consideration today?
Well, because I've been focusing on the climate conference, I'd like to give you an idea that may help produce, help us reduce our carbon footprint and create clean, renewable energy. And it is a very renewable source. And that is, millions of people every day go to gyms around the country and exercise. And they exercise on all these machines like the Stairmaster, the rower, the stationary bicycle. And I say that, you know, any kind of physical energy could be made into electricity. And so I would like to see, instead of them getting on the Stairmaster, it would be the Electro Stairmaster or the Electro Bike or the Electro Rower, where not only are they getting in shape and looking good, but they're also producing clean, renewable energy while they're doing it. And my idea was that the club, like, say, Gold's Gym, it would be Gold's Electro Gym, and they'd give you a card. And when you go into the gym in the morning, you put your card in the electro bike, and you bicycle, you know, you get your exercise, and then you pull your card out of there, and then you put it in the electro rower, and then you generate electricity there. And you do that, and then at the end of the month, you turn your card in to see how much electricity you've made, and you're given, like, some money off your membership fee or maybe a T-shirt or something that, or some courses for free that could sort of compensate for the electricity. So not only are you looking in shape and getting in shape every day, but you're making clean, renewable electricity. And I think with the thousands, perhaps there might be a million gyms in America if they turn to these new type of energy-producing exercise machines. I think that this would be a real big renewable energy resource, and that's my contribution to helping to slow the carbon, slow our carbon output, and keeping our planet a little bit cooler, so that we don't go into catastrophic climate meltdown like Venus, where the temperature they had excessive CO2 on their surface, and right now on Venus the temperature is about 700 degrees and lead runs like water. So we don't want to build up too much carbon here on Earth because our fate might lie with Venus. And so one way to do it would be solar or electric electro gyms to help people turn their wonderful energy into electricity.
Well, it's a great idea. How do you envision collecting this energy and where would it go?
Well, this energy could actually be used to run the very building that the gym is in, and so that would help reduce the footprint of the building itself, and they can buy the electricity from the gym directly and power the building, because most of these gyms are inside of buildings.
Oh, wow. That's a great idea. And I could see it happening. I've seen a version of the conversion of physical energy into electrical energy. There was a program I saw about a community in South America. I can't remember. I think it was Peru, where they established these communal laundromats. And the laundromats were powered by people pedaling what looked like a bicycle.
That's what I'm talking about.
That was how they got their laundry done.
That's what I'm talking about. And, when you think of the number of people who exercise every day, and it's around the clock, too, they even have these 24-hour Nautilus gyms. So this would be a continuous source of electricity. Also, you know, on the exercise floors, they've made something called piezoelectric dance floors. Piezoelectric, that's spelled P-I-E-Z-O, electric. like piezoelectric. Scientists found in the early 1800s that when they took a quartz crystal, you know those things people wear in their necks sometimes as quartz crystals, and they bent it, they put it under stress, that electrons popped off of the crystal lattice and were made to run a circuit. So they took this idea and they put it into flooring on a dance floor, and as people were dancing on the floor, they were generating electricity. So I say on these in these exercise places too, where people do a lot of work on the floor, that they can put in a piezoelectric floor, so as the people are going up and down and doing all their exercises, they could also be generating electricity. And also, people have these roll-ups that they use that they're on when they do exercise. I forget what they call. They're sort of mats, and I see women walking around with these mats and all that. Well, those could be piezoelectric mats. So when you're working out on the mat, you're generating electricity. It could be used to charge up your cell phone. So your electricity right there with your own little piezoelectric exercise mat, you could be making electricity to power your recharge batteries, et cetera, et cetera.
So and think of the concept as applied to, let's say, highways where you put these electricity gathering
devices. Yes.
Devices on the highway or, you know, embedded in the highways, and as cars roll over, and there's no shortage of that happening, then they can generate electricity to even light the highways at night. Great idea. Thanks so much for calling in.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. What are your thoughts about the major shootout in San Bernardino? We didn't discuss it, and one of the reasons is that I'm not convinced that we know much enough to engage in a definitive investigative piece right now, but we can talk about what is unfolding. I have a natural proclivity to, when these things happen, to not go with the flow of information because it's in its formative stage. Things still have to be known and investigated, but it is a bit troublesome that a lot of information suddenly is available, and it seems as if it's quite conclusive and pointing, of course, in one direction. And I'm concerned about that, and I'm also concerned about the tone of coverage and how it is already beginning to shape public opinion and even public policy. We really have to watch this. There's no question that this is a major tragedy. But although, of course, it's being said that this is, you know, the biggest mass killing since, the killing in Connecticut of these children, I think we still have to bear in mind, it depends on whose history you're talking about and what is the historical reference here. This is not to excuse anything, but we have to be very, very sharp in the consumption of information at this time, because we know that there are many agendas at play. One is to shore up what eventually will be U.S. policy in the so-called Middle East. We know that it is going to affect the presidential candidates and their positions. It is going to shape public opinion. It is going to possibly provoke widespread Islamophobia and a kind of paranoia that may or may not be the right way to respond. So in the immediate aftermath of something like this, you always have to be guarded about and suspect, really. Hold all of the information sources suspect, because we know the history as well. When these major tragedies occur, the media become the willing mouthpieces of the governmental structure, which has its own agenda. And we have to be very careful about that. I was looking at CNN, and Chris Cuomo was sharing quite a bit of that discussion when I looked at it. And it was just quite shocking to me. And then again, not really, knowing the role that CNN and other major media outlets play at times like this. The immediate impact of the event caused a concentration in terms of coverage on this terrorism piece. We have words like radicalized being used very, very frequently to shape our public opinion, to shape our minds, that this is something entirely different from any other kind of mass killing that we have experienced. And again, talking about the historical reference point here in the United States, the insistence on rewriting history so as to make the event fit that context as a major example of a horrible act committed by a Muslim. And this is really, really dangerous territory here. Of course, if you are a student of history, you know that the atrocities committed in the United States, mass killings, are nothing new. They're not new at all. And certainly the people on the receiving end of such atrocities uniformly are people of color, you know, being obliterated by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. We have that history. So when people say at times like this, when you hear the news media talking about the fact that this is the worst mass killing since such and such, it is a rewrite of history, and it is done to basically distort the historical record so as to achieve the larger objective of promoting a false consciousness and false information. And we don't see challenges to that when people say things like this. Certainly, it would not make sense to a Native American to claim that this is the worst mass killing. It would not make sense to an African American to say this is the worst mass killing. Not at all. The historical record makes this event, it dwarfs this event. The mass killings that have occurred here by guns and other ways of, I mean, the first bombing, domestic bombing in the United States by the government of its citizens occurred right here. You know, there is that historical record in Oklahoma. We have the Red Riots of 1919, where hundreds of black people were killed in open race-based warfare. All of these incidents instigated by whites with a genocidal program to rid the country of blacks. So we can't fall for this rewriting of history all the time when these things occur. This is not at all to excuse what has happened, but it is to really understand it and to understand it truthfully. The record stands in the United States that mass killings were quite routine in our history. Quite routine. And if we look at the current dilemma, which we have been discussing all week, and that is the police killing of people we call civilians, that is to say citizens, and you add up and you find that over the past couple of decades, several thousands have been killed, and with apparent impunity for the most part. You can consider these mass killings. The killings may not have happened at one time, but the effect is the same. So these are the kinds of discussions that we need to engage in. And what is this event? What happened here? We still don't know. And we should not give an automatic pass, because the media at this time, and this happens in all of these major events, the media will tend first and foremost to pledge its allegiance not to the public's right to know, not to know the truth of things, but A, to be the first to report it, B, to be the first to report the government's interpretation of this event, and C, to be in charge of the story, because so much rests on this, which validates the media entity covering it. So with all of that, it means that you have to be guarded in the consumption of information, especially at times like these when we know that there are contributing factors. We have a nation that has been encouraged to look disfavorably upon Muslims. We have a rightward, a very rightward shift. We have the U.S. government itself trying to justify its re-entry into the war it started, the unjustified war it started all these years ago, and now to affirm its standing, having lost its so-called grip and leadership to Russia. We have the idea of the refugee issue being so central to what's going on in the presidential race. It serves very neatly, it serves the purpose of candidates who have basically been advocating a race-based agenda, whether they wish to acknowledge it or not, the media, that is. But it is a racist agenda under the guise that it has to do with immigration. It has nothing to do with immigration. It has to do with the standing order in the United States that says that the issue of white supremacy prevails. And it is a convenient way of arguing against what France had already begun to argue, and many of the European countries concerned about maintaining racial purity, and now they've coupled it with religious purity. Christianity must prevail in the United States, and here we have all these Muslims coming in. They've got to be contained. They are bacteria infecting our society, and we've got to keep it in check. So an event like this, this shooting, this mass shooting, fits all of these agendas very, very neatly and very precisely, and it will be exploited toward these ends. And so hold off. Do not come to conclusions yet. We will see where this goes. And so far, what we are seeing is, in my mind, to be, you don't need to endorse any of the information that you're receiving right now. It is way too early, and the primary objective in the immediate aftermath of something like this is to influence public opinion so as to achieve other objectives. You see, that's what's happening. So don't get excited, and don't act as if you have conclusive proof about anything. So that's my advice. We'll take this short break and come back to your calls at 888-874-4888 right after this short break.
All right.
888-874-4888. You're listening to PRN.FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, your host, and this is Free Your Mind Friday, the day that we float ideas that have been lurking around in our minds for a while. We use this time to bring these ideas to this open forum, to have people react to them and to appreciate our thinking. What is your thinking, either about the issues of the week, the issues we discussed here on Lead Stories, or news events and developments that are outside of what we discussed, but worthy of further exploration and debate? What are your ideas? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I just want to return to this while we wait for your calls. I want to return to this issue of the mass killing in San Bernardino with 14 killed and now 21 dealing with wounds of that shootout. But and the alleged perpetrators themselves killed in that event. But what I'm going to stress to you is we don't know. We know what is being reported, but take it with a very large grain of salt. This and in any other instance where you have a major tragedy occurring and you have all the reasons to be on guard about the information that we are being fed, because there is no way independently to verify anything that we are seeing and hearing at this time. It will take time before all of that is fleshed out. This is the immediate aftermath, and the sources of information are not generated independently by the media. The sources of information are being fed to the media, so that the media is not really operating right now in full investigative mode. They are receiving information from a system that has a vested interest in doing all kinds of things to shape public opinion about this. So that said, it means that all information or any information about this event, you have to be very careful about it, but look at it and investigate it as you go. From Long Island, Al, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Louis. Louise?
Eutrice, yes.
Eutrice,
how are you?
Excuse me. I just wanted to call because I haven't heard this mentioned anywhere or followed up in the media anywhere. The day after the Paris bombing, I was watching Channel 7 here in New York, and the Pentagon correspondent made the statement that the Iraqi intelligence service had notified the French 24 hours prior to the attack that the attack was coming and there were 20 people involved. I have not heard that again. I have not seen it written any paper or any place else. Have you heard that?
No, as a matter of fact, I haven't.
Yeah. Yep. It startled me. Because, you know, it reminded me of the famous Saddam Hussein when he was allegedly, you know, captured by the troops. 9 o'clock that morning on CNN, they basically ran the story how they knew where Saddam was for months and how they had placed a tracking device on the cab that he was using that was parked in front of the house because they wanted to trace his whereabouts and who he was contacting. That only was stated once on the news.
Well, it's very interesting that you brought this to our attention. Do you see any vestiges of that in the reporting on this current shootout and mass killing?
Well, it's obvious. The fact that the French government was notified, let's go on the assumption that this is true. The fact that the government was notified 24 hours in advance, there was no alert, there was nothing to basically get their hands around the individuals, and so it was one of these, let's let it happen, because, you know, in order to justify what we really want to do, we need one of these events. And let's all be honest here. If the Iraqi Secret Service or intelligence service knew about the attack, then the U.S. Intelligence services knew as well. There is no way that the Iraqis don't share, or let's put it this way. There is a reason why the embassy in Iraq cost $1 billion, because they have more electronics, more people working in there to gather information than any other place in the Middle East. So I just figured I'd pass that on, and hopefully I would have felt comfortable if you would have said, oh, I've also heard that.
No, I didn't hear it. I haven't heard that report at all.
Yeah. But Channel 7, it must have been at 7:10 in the morning the day after.
Oh,
I was
great.
Putting on my shirt, and sure enough, the Pentagon correspondent, you know, they have one of these people that go over there and sit in the same, you know, they sit in the same, they're like hand and glove. They would never say anything against the Pentagon, or else they'll lose their position. So you expect them to, you know, sugarcoat everything they say. So when they made that statement that, the Pentagon, notified us that the Iraqi intelligence had notified the French government 24 hours prior and that the number of people involved were 20, I looked at it and I said, wow. And I just figured, you get caught in these moments where you forget reality and you say, okay, I'll read about it in the paper later. But
you never read it.
Never saw it. I have looked at the paper. I've been online. I haven't heard it on any other newscast. It's one of those oops, it's similar to 9/11.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Whether you saw a similarity with that kind of courage as well.
Yeah. I was home on 9/11, and I immediately put on CNN, not that that's the official honest station, but for lack of a better station, I put that on, and I put the VCR to begin recording it. And the statements that were made on CNN, with people are caught in the reality of the moment, are filtered later on, and you'll never hear them again. Mm-hmm. So, it's interesting. Here again, somebody must have said, let's not talk about that, because there'll be more questions asked as to why was, why are we acting surprised when in reality we had a heads up? And, of course, the follow-up question would be, number one, well, how did the Iraqi government or intelligence services find this information from whom?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first question. Who did you get this information from? So it's a can of worms. Nobody wants to open that one up. And again, as you say frequently on your show, the events, you can't focus on the events. You need to focus on the actions and events that occur after the event. Because that's where the truth is.
That's where it is. Thank you, Al, for your call today and for contributing. Thank you.
If I hear or I see this posted anywhere, I'll call you back and say, hallelujah, somebody slipped again.
Thank you for being vigilant out there. Thanks. From New York City, Jay, you're on the air.
How are you, Trees?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. I was just calling to say the incident that happened out there in California earlier this week, at some point in time, people become desensitized to it. It seems like it occurs on such a regular basis, and then it's used and manipulated by the media to inflict certain pain on other people and bring about assumptions of other people that, you just pass it by. It's like, who cares? And in a way, that's kind of twisted if you think about it, because, you make the statement or the comment, I don't care about them people dying. It wasn't me. You know what I mean? But then when you look at history and you look at what's been done to African people and you look at what's been going on in the world over these last, I would say, 60, 70 years, you see how this type of behavior is breeding.
But I have to ask you, Jay, you do appreciate, of course, that in the scheme of things, in today's world, this does qualify as a major, major news event. This is a major situation that has developed here in the United States. Would you classify it as such, or would you disagree?
I would say, in a sense, it is. But then again, think about what it's like around the world. Think about what it's like. And some of the other foreign station news reports. You know, here it's such a big issue because, as Malcolm said, the chickens are coming home to roost.
Well, I do know that in the BBC, for example, and CNN took great issue with it when the BBC report started out, "It's just another day in the United States." That was how the reporter started his report, and CNN played it, and basically as a way of attacking that kind of reporting that suggested that violence of this type is typical in the United States, and the CNN program was highly critical of that. But that is nonetheless how the BBC saw it.
But, you know, Eutrice, maybe other people in the world see it that way also, in a sense of the videos that's being shown around the world of African Americans just blatantly being murdered. You know what I mean? People equate things differently sometimes. People may equate just one person being brutally murdered as the same thing as a massive amount of people being brutally murdered. So,
but at the same time, and I want to ask you how you feel about this. This is nonetheless situated within the context of world affairs, and particularly the U.S. role in world affairs at this time, and that is the U.S. engagement with ISIS and the allies of the United States engaged with ISIS, and it having the two shooters, the alleged shooters, Tashfeen Malik and her husband Syed Rizwan Farooq, as the principal actors here in a mass shooting and mass killing. Certainly you can't ignore that aspect of it.
No, you don't ignore that aspect of it. But remember one of the key words that you use, the actors in this play, in this affair. It's all part of the script to me to allow for the behavior that America shows around the world to continue and to also be able to lead to more destruction within that region. I mean, these are things that the media puts upon American people to get the feeling of, ha ha, hooray, we're going to kill our so-called enemies. And then there's no accountability or justification. That's why, if you remember, and I believe one of the key reasons why this war has gone on for as long as it has, and I've heard people bring it up, but not on a regular basis, is that body bags are not shown coming back to America like it was during the Vietnam era, which led to a lot of changes in regards to how that war was dealt with, which led to the ending of that war. So as long as we as Americans don't see the total brutalization and casualties of this war smack dab in our face, then this will continuously go on because, like I've said, we become desensitized to this type of action because it's like, whatever, it happens, you know? And that's the same way to where I think some of us as a people are getting towards the blatant murders of African people by the police officer. I think we're becoming desensitized to it and are starting to just see it as the norm. And once it becomes seen as the norm, you now have a very, very dangerous precedent. Because
well, thank you.
People going to react. Thank you, sister. Have a good day. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you for your contribution today, Jay. From Rosedale, Jose, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor.
Hello, Jose. How are you?
How are you?
Fine, thank you. What are your
Great.
Thoughts today?
It's good to hear you. Good to hear you.
Thank you.
You know, I heard one of your callers mention a moment ago something about the U.S. embassy in Iraq. And I remember when they built it, they talked about the size, the enormity of this embassy, which had me thinking about my native land, Jamaica. You know, there's the U.S. has an embassy there. That it is so huge. It makes me wonder, why is it these nations, these highly industrialized, imperialist nations, want to put those size embassies in other people's country, in these small, I mean, Jamaica is a small island. And to give out a few visas and so on and so forth, I don't know why is that size necessary? What goes on under the roof of those institutions? And I remember a few years ago, we had a massacre of monumental proportion in Kingston, in a village called Tivoli Gardens.
Right.
And to this day, the government has lied to us, telling us that about 70 people was killed in this massacre. And we know from reports on the ground that it's closer to 300 people or so was slaughtered by a government with the blood of Africa coursing through the veins, among other people's blood. And to see that our people should bring down such wrath on folks that look like them. And by the way, the people on the ground said they saw this thing flying over the area when this assault was going on, the massacre. And the media, again, which is a propaganda arm of the government, is always telling the people that they don't believe their lying eyes, that there's nothing flying around. And it turned out, in this kangaroo hearing that they're having, that there was outside interference in this massacre, this assault on this community. And so, again, it makes me wonder again, and to brighter minds, such as great minds such as yourself, you could probably touch a little bit on the roles of these humongous institutions. The British has one. They call it the British High Commission. Why high, I don't know. But they have these huge facilities. And I suspect that there's a whole lot of skullduggery and information gathering and arms. They have units in there that is hell-bent on corrupting the ruling class, the upper class, and they're doing all the media involved, because I'm sure many in the media is on their payroll and so forth. So there's a lot of skullduggery that goes on from these nations to keep these small nations underfoot. And so this may be just my imagination, but I'm hoping that maybe you could shed a little light, my professor, on the behavior and the attitudes of these superpowers when they open these supposedly embassies in your country to give out a few visas and so forth. But there's a lot more to it than meets the eye.
Thank you so much. In fact, your point was well taken in light of Benghazi as illustrative of this question. What is or what was the U.S. Embassy, what was that diplomatic, so-called diplomatic compound for, since the embassy itself is located elsewhere, not in Benghazi, but you wonder what is going on, and that question still has not been answered. Thanks so much for your call today. Let's go to Chicago. Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Treece, how's it going?
Great. How's it going in your wonderful city with your now resigned police superintendent?
Yes, yes. There's a lot of groundswell of activity here in Chicago, especially over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, as I'm hearing you talk and hearing a lot of the some of the callers that call in about the certain topics, you know, you touched upon, you know, learning about history. And, you know, I'm noticing a lot of activism going on in Chicago, which is a good thing. It's sort of like that spirit of, you know, what happened in the 60s is starting to revive itself a little bit. And, you know, we basically, you know, need to keep that up and keep that pressure up because, you know, this could be the start of something. I'm not saying it will be, but, you know, that opportunity is there for us. And it's been there for us for a couple of years now. But, you know, it's like it's more prevalent now than it has been, you know, before. And the thing about it is that this is not just, you know, in regards to just, you know, the black community, because this happens in, you know, Latino areas. And, you know, we have to form a solidarity amongst, you know, the oppressed people, you know, in this country, because obviously we're not all going to agree with everything that, you know, everybody agrees with. However, if there is some measure of solidarity amongst the groups to stop this oppression, then, you know, we'll have a better chance at it. And it was interesting how you were, you know, talking about the incident in California and how, you know, Muslims are being betrayed. And I'm wondering because, you know, like I said, I'm seeing a lot of activism here in Chicago, and it's involving, you know, not just, you know, black people, but, you know, Latino and even white people being involved in this. But I'm not seeing a lot of, say, Arab and Orthodox Muslims, which they could benefit from this as well because of the fact that, you know, as they are a group of oppressed people in this country as well. And it would be nice to have their support in this because, you know, at the same time, you know, most of them from the Middle East have support of sovereign countries as well. And you know, we can garner a lot of international support, you know, in this, you know, in this war against, you know, the racist institutions that sick policemen, you know, up on our communities and basically kill them with no, you know, with no retribution. So I'm just wondering, like, why don't we see enough Orthodox and Arab Muslims, you know, join? Because, I mean, you see a lot of the black Muslims in the Nation of Islam, but it would be nice to also have that support of Orthodox and Arab Muslims because it would help their cause as well of being demonized, you know, in the media because, you know, just like you say, anything that deals with a Muslim killing somebody is always considered terrorism, you know, but when a Christian does something, it's never a Christian thing. It's always, you know, they were crazy or they were just insane or they were troubled or, you know, whatever the case.
Or disgruntled.
So and even in the case of, like, say, you know, a person of color does something like that, you know, and they're not Muslim, it's not considered a Christian thing. So I don't get the well, I get it, but, you know, the era of religious superiority, you know, in the media has gone out of control because it's like,
well,
anybody,
you know, Henry, it may be a couple of things to consider. One is that this group understands itself to be demonized, and so perhaps as a reactive tactic, you know, low-key is the way to go. They don't want to bring any more attention to themselves, let alone become aggressive in their defense of their own self-defense. This happens. Number two is the alienation of a particular group has been so successfully executed in that sense because everybody thinks poorly. You know, it's across the board. When I say everybody, you know what I mean. It's generally the case that this particular community is a problem community. And a strong effort, an extraordinarily strong effort has to be made, even by people who are similarly situated, to overcome that. Look at what African-Americans have gone through. There's still African-American community, the Latino community, the Native American community. The Native American community gets very little support from outside of its strict community, because people have been encouraged to just disregard them and disregard the issues. So the African American community fighting certain struggles, we are seeing a wider support, but it has been slow in coming, and it is still not yet at a point of critical mass among people who are non-African American. The same with Latinos. Latino people are taking care of their issues, but you're not seeing a great crossover from any other community. Asians are taking care of their issues, but you're not seeing a great groundswell of support for them. And that's the nature of our racial condition. We have been segmented and we have been divided, and therefore we are taking care of business in strict terms of our interests, you see? And it takes a while for people to galvanize and see what they have in common, as opposed to, you know, what they don't have in common. It takes a while for people to get to that point. But your mayor says he's not resigning. What is the activity there?
Well, we saw that in regards to the mayor, you know, taking the stance. But the next target is basically the Cook County District Attorney, Anita Alvarez. She's the next target. There's been protests and sit-outs in front of her office in downtown Chicago, and they've been protesting for like the last 3 or 4 days now with that one. And
I think it's great that the community is moving in an aggressive way to get these things done. However, I still think, overwhelmingly, we see elements of the same old pattern, which is to settle for symbolic victories and not systemic change. And that requires taking on the traitors within the community. A lot of people marching along with the people don't need to be there. And they need to be held accountable for what has happened in Chicago, because they remained inactive, or they sided with the injuring parties, the people who are committing these crimes, whether by commission or omission. You know, I'm talking the Jesse Jacksons. Nobody's called this guy into account. The Al Sharptons, nobody's publicly called them to account.
And you know what's weird, Utrecht, is, you know, like, I was out there one day, and I saw ministers out there who I knew publicly supported Rahm Emanuel during his election. And and now all of a sudden they're calling for his head. You know, it's like, you know, we've been telling you about Rahm Emanuel for years. Now all of a sudden you don't like the guy, you know? Like, come on now.
and they use these tragedies to rehabilitate themselves and to make themselves relevant, when in fact this should be a deciding factor in, you know, people saying, look, you've served your time, and we need a leadership that is not easily bought. We need a leadership that has some degree of integrity, and we're moving ahead. And that's really why they have inserted themselves in the struggle, because they still think, well, you know, I could squeeze another minute or two of fame out of this and get to be back on, you know, in the media and on television, people quoting my wonderful words. But thanks so much for your call today. And, of course, I'll be calling you and leaning on you to give us continuing reports from Chicago, from the people's perspective, as to what's going on there.
Anytime.
Thank you, Henry, for your call. Thank you all for your calls. This is what this program is for. This is why we have set aside a time, dedicated time, so that people can talk about their views on whatever it is that is in play. And we do so with great respect for one another and with a genuine desire to engage each other in discussion and debate. Thank you so much for keeping that as central to our talks here on Free Your Mind Friday. That brings us to the end of the program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Guns and Butter. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And of course, you know, this is the weekend. This is time for you to relax, to take care of yourselves, to be surrounded by people who bring positive dimension to your life, to make it a point to avoid other people who don't, and to enjoy yourself. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.